We're going to talk now to the great American author Ishmael Reed. His latest book is Going Too Far, Baraka Books. Are you there, Mr. Reed?
Yes, I am. How are you, Phil?
Very good. It's great to be talking to you because I've run into a lot of people who are gnashing their teeth that didn't like this movie Django, and thank heaven you wrote an article. So we have a kind of a guide on for this. One odd thing, by the way, I got to say at the top, what is it with Hollywood in this odd naming? Wouldn't they have Rango and Django and Django this? It's like they're thinking of some kind of marketing thing. And, well, as a matter of fact, you touch on that in your opening paragraph. You say this is strictly business. Could you elaborate on that? Who's behind the film?
Well, the Weinstein Company, Harold Weinstein. And matter of fact, he went to the same university that I attended, the University of Buffalo. Mm-hmm. And he was one of those who fought for the distribution rights of for Precious, mm-hmm. which is another what you might call a Holocaust porn movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's quite natural that he would follow up with this one. Precious made a great deal of money, and so this one's making a lot of money, too. So mm-hmm. they're looking at the bottom line, and apparently are aiming their product at young white men. That's what I read this today from Salon.com, that the real hot group that Hollywood is aiming to cultivate are these young white males. And I've gotten most of the anger and even resentment of my piece in the Wall Street Journal mm-hmm. from that group. As a matter of fact, I welcomed a support from an odd place from a right winger. he said he was really he found it laughable that progressives and liberals would love this movie so much, and he called it torture porn. And he said that the reason was that nowadays, blacks are at the bottom of the progressive hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And I still agree with that, the liberal progressive hierarchy in mm-hmm. the United States now. He said if it had been done by any other group belonging to the liberal progressive coalition, like Asians or, God forbid, lesbians or mm-hmm. LGBT community, then there would have been an uproar.
Mm-hmm.
But since, it's done about blacks, they can support this movie.
Yeah, it's really peculiar, this... Mr. Tarantino is not black. He presumes a lot. He's in territory which we all know is supposed to make a person a little careful about their language and the things they do. And I have to ask you this. I saw that he was interviewed on Charlie Rose, and Charlie Rose said to him, asked him about using the N-word so much. I understand it's used a lot. And mm-hmm. he said, black people use that all the time, and so that's reality. I get to do it too. That's an echo of something I heard before. I mean, when people attack lesbians, gay, they often say, "Well, listen, they all use these words." And then if I've seen Klan type people, they always say, "Well, these black kids, they use the word. I get to use it."
Well, I call it an essay I wrote about the controversy over a book that. One of the Yale professors, Randall Kennedy, one of them, wrote a book called Nigger.
Mm-hmm.
And I said it's sort of like a crack word for some whites. It's like an injection, like a boost, that one uses to feel really euphoric. And I noticed that down in, when I attended a conference downstate in California. I think it was one of the Claremont colleges,
mm-hmm.
which has a reputation of being conservative. Mm-hmm. And there was a conference there, and the white men really loved using the word N-word. They were discussing Huckleberry Finn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and Charles Johnson and I were sitting there, Charles Johnson, National Book Award winner, and we're saying, what are we doing here? But they just seem to get a high. But
it's a narcotic,
point,
I get it.
Yeah, one other point that the concern, and you can get his comments at the comments that followed. They were really vicious and really hurt my feelings. he said that during that period, the 1850s, criteria that he's supposed to, where the movie is supposed to take place, seldom was the word nigger used. Mm-hmm. That most of the letters and correspondences, the word was either Negro or colored.
Yes. Actually, I think you're absolutely right. I think that there's a funny idea. People project back their own fantasies on history. As I understand the way this film goes, this is not the South of the slaveocracy. This is some strange kind of Las Vegas in New Orleans or something. This is not the plantation South.
I think people refer to it as a porn movie are correct. It's a porn movie with a little more equipment and a little more money behind it. Mm-hmm. And I think you could see that throughout the some of the dominatrix scenes and the other. I think Tarantino escapes because he put a lot of black people, as I say, you know, it's like tossing black people in the way of your criticism. Mm-hmm. So he has Jamie Scott, who's endorsed it. And that's been the role of the African-Americans who play in these films that blacks find objectionable. They become the flag catchers, mm-hmm. And that's a business decision. So The Help, which was really offensive, Viola Davis, the actress who received the Oscar for her performance, defended the film. Mm-hmm. And with this film, with the Precious, you had the black actors defend the film. And with this film, you have Jamie Foxx defending the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read in a comment that, you know, the director Spike Lee, of course, had made a very slight remark, actually. I guess now people tweet. And I don't know if you tweet, but anyhow, he did. And then there was a reaction where the actor Foxx said that Spike Lee had promised not to say anything. Which is a very, what, there's some kind of a deal? Don't say anything?
I think that Spike Lee left himself open by not seeing the movie and commenting on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that allowed all of his enemies to come down hard on him, like in some of the articles I've read, where they say that both I and Spike Lee are suffering from sour grapes about this movie. I've made movies myself. the movie that we made in 1981 is still in circulation. It plays at museums like the Whitney and Pompidou and all this. Last year, but we had some of the best, highest caliber of actresses and actors. They wrote their roles. They had freedom to improvise on their roles. We had a great director, Bill Gunn, mm-hmm. whom Hollywood found too difficult. We had Walter Cotton and Verda Mae Grosvenor, and even Jim Wright, who was in all the old Oscar Micheaux movies, mm-hmm. to show some kind of link between the generations. And the photography was done by Robert Polidori, who's now a photographer for the New Yorker magazine, and who got a commission to do the photography on the restoration of Palace of Versailles. Mm-hmm. So we have pretty some class. And Cecil Brown and I did a movie a few years ago that's called Twofer, which is about intellectual and politics on a college campus. Mm-hmm. So we don't come to this discussion entirely empty-handed. We don't have the distribution of Hollywood, but we have made movies.
Isn't it pretty much a kind of still a segregated business, kind of like it was in the 30s when there were black directors and producers and artists, and they used to make their own, but they were segregated. They basically short in your own theater. They weren't going to be allowed to short anywhere else.
You're one of the very few people who are aware of this history, because for $79, I got hours upon hours of black independent movies going back to 1916. Mm-hmm. And that might be considered, the 30s and 40s might be considered the golden age of black film. I think the production cost became prohibitive for black filmmakers, but in those days you had scripts that were based upon the writings of people like James Weldon Johnson, and you had, you know, blacks writing scripts and directing, and so it's but I mean, one of the problems with those films, a lot of them have Christian themes, and some of them African Americans are made to look too good to be true. The idea of promoting positive and integration of images, as opposed to the ones that he got from Hollywood. So it was a reaction to Hollywood. Some of the films.
Yeah. By the way, but there was always a reaction to that, right? I mean, because white chauvinist thinking was, you can't portray yourself that way. We all know you're gamblers and thieves. That was, you know.
Well, Cecil Brown, who has a brilliant piece take on this movie that's coming out tomorrow on Counterpunch, just ingenious.
Good.
And I would discuss it today, and we're perhaps tracing it to the lack of esteem that a number of nouveau whites, we call them.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the people who are called white in this country weren't called that 50, 60 years ago. I told an audience at a university in Poland, where that I was visiting, near Poland that I was visiting, that if you go to the United States, you can get a whiteness upgrade. But I was in Rome, and people said, "Well, I'm a seventh generation Roman or French, same thing." People have a 1,000-year history,
mm-hmm.
But here, I think the problem is that, as Romain Gary, the French writer, said, is that the nouveau whites would rather identify with the slave master than with their ancestors, some of whom were mm-hmm. in the same situation as slaves. At least, as Frederick Douglass went to Ireland,
mm-hmm.
he said, the Irish there were in the same similar situation as slaves were. So they're really ashamed of their ancestry, and so this is just a theory I have.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they want to do is get self-esteem by putting on black people,
mm-hmm.
and movie and the TV industry cater to this need.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've pointed out before that you could speak of, and you do, of racism and its history, particularly in North America, as a mental illness. Blackface performances, those people all needed to be given a shrink,
Well, I think that the reaction to, for me, the reaction to the president's election brought mm-hmm. it all out.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is that 38% of the whites voted for him in the last
mm-hmm.
election.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some people who have been.
But it was close. Yeah.
It was close. But I think there are some diehard white supremacists who've damaged the nation. We go into these wars because of white superiority, because the people from Yale and Harvard who are leadership don't take time out to study the cultures of others and, do a lot of misreading of signals, just as they did for the Native Americans. Up in Alaska, they thought Native Americans up there were doing a ghost dance and were about to uprise, to have an uprising against them, and they slaughtered people. So I mean, this happens all over the place, where millions mm-hmm. of people have died to uphold a white supremacy. And you look at that Civil War, which I point out in a piece today on Truth Dig, mm-hmm. this site called Truth Dig,
with
an interview with Chris Hedges. I talk about how all those people who fought in the Civil War had no stake in the war. I mean, they weren't slave owners, some of these mm-hmm. Southern peasants, but yet 640,000 people died to uphold white supremacy, and at the end of the war, the planter elite showed them what they thought of them. They proposed that slaves fight alongside of them. Jefferson Davis and the planter, they didn't care. They found that these white peasants and the black slaves are interchangeable.
Yeah.
So that shows you the length mm-hmm. to which this country will. You Canadians know that they've invaded Canada.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, this is Ishmael Reed, and he wrote a book, Flight to Canada, which is a terrific read, as well as, by the way, a classic. Reckless Eyeballing is a classic.
I think Quentin Tarantino read some of Flight to Canada too.
Yeah, he may. Yeah, don't you? It's kind of a pain. A guy like that he knows how to steal. That his whole career has been borrowing pieces from other people's films.
Right? Well, I pointed to in my essay in Wall Street Journal, which is really gone viral, way beyond our expectations. I point to the fact that this is an old story, and I cited a letter that Martin Delaney wrote in 1853 to Frederick Douglass, who incidentally, after he got in hot water here, old John Brown Ray went to Quebec.
Yes.
And I talked to Robin, and Robin wasn't aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
But he accuses Harriet Beecher Stowe of plagiarizing Josiah Henson.
Yes.
Who also settled in Canada. Remember, he set up a commune called Dawn?
The so-called cabin is actually here in Ontario. That's right.
It's there. It was very
They have a historical site there.
Well, it was successful until he became a celebrity and started going on tour. Became a celebrity because of Harriet Beecher Stowe's book. But in this letter, Martin Delaney complains to Frederick Douglass that he, in his newspaper, can interview this review this woman's book, can't review his novel. Yeah. And he says this woman cannot tell our story, but he points to her borrowing ideas from Josiah Henson and also from other black writers. And he even proposes that the publishing company gives Josiah Henson $5,000.
But by the way,
this is nothing new. This idea of borrowing.
No, but also isn't it a matter of like with in the case of white directors, authors, or whatnot? And I'm thinking of William Styron, Nat Turner, they know a market, and that's a white mass market, and they see a story and they say, oh, I know what to do with that.
Yeah,
and
well,
then they transform the story to suit that audience, and to flatter that audience.
What you have now is a proliferation of what I call white hoodie novels, where you have white middle class or upper class novelists hanging with the brothers, you know, on the street corner in their novels. I haven't read Michael Chabon's book. I read a description of it, Telegraph Avenue, and he has, you know, the missing African American father and you know, downtrodden, suffering black woman and, you know, the white Superman, I guess, who comes in and but he mentions me, he cites me in the first pages, and because of that, black people have read the novel, and he said, well, what does this got to do with anything? And I don't know why he cited me, but do you even have Tom Wolfe? He must be in his 80s now, writing rap songs.
Yeah.
And
well, like you said, it's a mental illness. These people need treatment.
There was one young woman who wrote a book called a novel called Love and Consequences. Mm-hmm. And it was all about this character. It was a memoir. It was not a novel. It was all about her living in a place in the hood with a woman named Big Mama, and she's hanging out with the Crips and the Red Bloods and the gangs, black gangs. It turned out it was a fake.
I'm not surprised. Isn't another word for this is voyeurism? Isn't it kind of a voyeur?
Yeah, I think that's the word a lot of people are using. But get back to this this book. She got a $100,000 advance. Uh-huh. And the publisher promised to withdraw the book from circulation. It's still for sale.
God.
I mean, whether you get it right or wrong, there's a lot of money. And I always talk about The Wire, you know, David Simon's The Wire.
Mm-hmm.
David
mm-hmm.
Simon's made so much money. And Richard Price, who's also a contributor to The Wire, he's made so much money doing hoodie books, he moved to Harlem.
Oh, my God.
And he's now up there leading tours of black landmarks.
Well, what could be more appropriate? You know, Stephen Colbert interviewed that gentleman from The Wire, and he said, "You know, you know so much about black life. Why do so white people like your story, your show so much?" And he said, "I don't know." That was his answer. I mean, hard to believe. I have to ask you about this apropos of the film Django. Henry Louis Gates. You can find the interview on the net, and I'm sure you must have read it or heard about it. He's talked for 44 minutes with Mr. Tarantino, and he was trying to help him out in a way. He said, well, you have these black, really powerful black actors. You have Mr. Fox and then the other guy named, I'm sorry, Jackson. He said, they help you with the script because you have some strong language there. Did they help you with that? The answer was no. He said, I wrote the script.
Oh, you can tell he wrote it.
I think Mr. Gates wanted him to say, "Oh yeah, it was a collaboration."
Well,
was not a collaboration.
Well, one of the points I made in my essay or review was that Tarantino, in the script, there's a nod to something called a talented tenth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is the reason that it's gotten a good reception at The Root, which is where Henry Louis Gates is the editor-in-chief, like Jamie Foxx was the star.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the outfit that's owned by the Washington Post.
Yes, he's the one that had that teaching moment with the police.
Oh, yeah. Well, now he's hanging out with the cop, which I guess is an example of Stockholm Syndrome. You know, going to bars and going to baseball games with the cop. They insulted him, but I mentioned in there that The Root is a hangout for the talented tenth and the exceptional Negroes and post-race blacks.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea that runs through that movie that Jamie Foxx was an exceptional black. The character Django is an exceptional black person. Mm-hmm. And if you'll notice, all the other blacks, the majority of blacks in the movie are passive and submissive and do a lot of eye rolling and movie and mugging mm-hmm. that we associate with minstrelsy. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that only exceptional blacks, 1 in 10,000, in case you missed it, which is the voice of Talented Tenth, can bring about emancipation of black people. And it's also something that I remember Stanley Elkins, the Sambo thesis, mm-hmm. that, you know, these people were docile. And I mean, there were revolts all the time. Mm-hmm. And when he talks about black slavery, I think I can count I have to really investigate. I doubt that's like the myth, like the black slave master, mm-hmm. or you know, blacks willing to fight for the Confederacy. Mm-hmm. But he says they're even lower than the House Negro. You know, some of the great fugitive orators and emancipators came from the House, mm-hmm. Because they were illiterate and they overheard, you know, all this stuff about liberty and freedom. Mm-hmm. They would talk at the dinner table. They knew what was going on, just as the field slaves knew what was going on. Mm-hmm. I mean, Booker T. Washington talks about his mother gathering all the kids and praying for a liberation and for Lincoln to be successful. So people knew what was going on, mm-hmm. but often they would get their news from house slaves mm-hmm. who overheard conversations at the dinner table. Mm-hmm. And for the very vicious and cruel slave masters, they had ingenious ways of using poison and other devices to get rid of them. Yeah. So for them to, I think this is an old-time 1920s Marxist mm-hmm. class thing where you have, you know, one class pitted against another, mm-hmm. but they were all in the same situation. So I think that it's obvious that he didn't do his homework, and also he sees himself as someone who's given us myths. He says black people, he's going to give black people myths, and they need myths. And he and this group at BET, Black Entertainment Network, there was an interview there, which mm-hmm. turned out to be really a commercial, an ad for the movie. Mm-hmm. He said that, you know, this is the first time slavery has been treated. and Jamie Foxx and the woman who was interviewing him agreed.
People are missing out on an awful lot. When they have to fantasize that this subject hasn't been talked about. On that matter of what the slaves knew, as you point out, they knew plenty. I mean, there were a lot of the leaders were preachers, for example. They actually didn't need a German dentist to tell them how to handle a firearm, and they didn't there's this tutelage. I notice the mean letters to you all think that that blacks learned everything from white people.
In Amistad, in Lincoln, I saw Lincoln the other day, and I saw Amistad, and I saw a Django Unchained, and what they all have in common is that black people kind of hang around as whites discuss their faith.
Yes.
You know, even their enemies, like slave masters.
Well, in Lincoln, the blacks were in the loges. They were upstairs watching.
Oh, yeah. We're bystanders. And we have to have white, you know, emancipators and sort of like superheroes to come along and rescue us. Mm-hmm. And exceptional black people. I mean, that's what Du Bois felt. Mm-hmm. And when Du Bois, I think he might have abandoned that idea of the Talented Tenth. But
he'd heard you talking, I know that.
Well, I think he said, you know, that such a thing as a Talented Tenth. I said, what about Fannie Lou Hamer? Mm-hmm. And all those, you know, ordinary people who helped Martin Luther King, who brought Martin Luther King to power.
Yes.
So I think this is something that this is a lack of education. You know, the school curriculum is part of the problem here.
Yeah.
That people really don't know this, and it's not covered. Well, because curriculum is still devoted to white supremacy. And not, I would say, European or Western civilization, but they don't even get that right.
Yeah.
You know, they cover a few countries. The idea of American education at Harvard and Yale is that a superficial knowledge of the history and traditions of a handful of European countries makes you smart. Mm-hmm. They don't cover Eastern Europe. They don't cover the Northern Europe. Mm-hmm. I mean, they leave out, they do, a half-assed job on Europe, too.
They certainly don't know South America.
Oh, I mean, forget about it. They don't know the cultures in this country.
Yeah. Well,
I was reading, go on.
Well, I actually want to make one place where in my opinion, would be segregation, the control of theater, particularly images and music, et cetera, but on that... you point out in your article, we have brilliant black films. Spike Lee has made some. You said that one of them, the film about the black soldier in Italy, which I never got a chance to see here, but you said it was showed on one occasion at 10 o'clock at night in Oakland.
Yeah, it was shown at 10:30 p.m. When it ran here.
Now, how can it be that one of our great directors gets that kind of trashy treatment?
Well, I think they find his message uncomfortable. I mean, they feel they can't sell a thing like... you remember I wrote about the marketing behind Precious. Mm-hmm. They said, we can't sell The Great Debater, and we can't sell the bridge at St. Miracle at St. Anna, mm-hmm. to the mall, to the white public. Mm-hmm. So we have to have someone, black people, front for this movie, which blacks are going to find offensive. Mm-hmm. And that's when Oprah Winfrey and Tyler Perry stepped in, and Lee Daniels. So they used blacks as front persons, like the Small Business Administration, where you had a black person made president, and whites making all the money and mm-hmm. run the company.
Yeah, and it becomes a method to shunt people aside and keep them on the sideline while the main express goes through, and it's the same old white power. A theater story that makes controls.
I got fan mail from the guy, the right winger who runs Red State, Eric Erickson.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they are interested in writing messages to me, but I pointed out that of the 30 members of the board of governors of the Oscars, they're all white.
Yeah.
A couple of women, and now I understand that they have included a black woman.
Yeah.
So,
familiar.
But after dealing with these people who went from New York to Hollywood, you could understand why Reagan went to the right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just that there's such hypocrisy there.
Yeah.
The lack of numbers and the lack of black members in the Screenwriters Guild, I mean, there's segregation everywhere. Yeah, we have black stars going around criticizing the president when they have a lot of work to do right there. In Los Angeles, and I think it's a disgrace that the NAACP continues to give these movies awards. And I think as a matter of fact, Quentin Tarantino was a guest at the last Image Awards ceremony, regardless of Pulp Fiction and these other movies he's done.
Oh my God!
But I guess it's on the basis of donations. And as a matter of fact, I mentioned that Tyler Perry gave the NAACP $1 million a couple of months before the NAACP gave Precious all these awards. Yeah. Which gave the Oscars a green light to give some awards.
Okay.
So it's and the point is that Walter White of the NAACP was one of those crusaders who went to Hollywood in the 1940s and tried to get them change the images of give more variety of roles to black people.
Yeah. Well, another revelation. Money talks, I guess.
Well, the NAACP paid me back by doing a hatchet job on Juice.
Yeah.
And when I tried to reply, they kept postponing the publication of the letter.
Well, I'm sure glad you published this one. Black Audiences, White Stars, and Django Unchained. And it's Ishmael Reed. His latest book is Going Too Far, Baraka Books. Mr. Reed, thank you very, very much. We really appreciated this.
Thanks a lot, Phil.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. Catch us. Check us on the web, taylor-report.com. Hey, we'll see you next year.